Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you're really just vibing out.
This is D-Lo and KC.
I'm the streets voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
What's good, loved ones? We welcome you in here. Damian Barling, Kenny Caraway is dealing with KC on ESPN 1320. We're so happy that you're here with us. We've got a very busy day ahead. Jason Jones of The Athletic at the J Street Vibes podcast. He's going to be with us at 1225. Damon Bruce joining us for the very first time. Of course, he's the host of Damon Radowinkowski, which you can hear each and every single weekday here on ESPN 1320 at 2 o'clock. And then James Ham, he's going to be with us at 1:30. James Ham, of course, Kings insider for NBC Sports. Lots of Kings talk today.
Yeah.
As the head of basketball operations has been named. It is not Sasha Gupta, who was, he was the presumptive favorite, not just in Sacramento, but all over the league. It is Monty McNair, the now former assistant general manager of the Houston Rockets. He played football at Princeton University. He majored in computer science, and he has spent his entire basketball career working with Daryl Morey in the Houston Rockets, Kenny.
First of all, congratulations to Monty McNair. I mean, that's pretty cool, and that's a pretty cool path that he's taken. Like, he seems like he's, you know, started from the mud as far as, you know, NBA front offices go, and he worked his way up, and now he's, you know, the GM, president of ops, whatever you want to call it. He's one of the big guys for an NBA franchise, man. So I like to see that. That's dope. So congratulations to him. As far as him as a candidate, I'll be honest with you, Damian. I'm not really here to be like, this guy's great, good hire, none of that.
Yeah.
We don't know.
We have no idea.
We have no idea.
All of the candidates that were out there, of all of the candidates who were on that six-person list, this was the one that the least amount of information was, like, readily available about.
Right.
I was making jokes on social media last night. I couldn't find a picture of him on Getty. He's been in the league 10 years. And I couldn't find an archived picture of him anywhere other than the one that's been used on virtually every media site, which is the one from the Sloan Conference.
And when you finally did come up with a picture, I was like, well, why did you put Ryan Wasilo up there? I don't know. What does he have to do with the King GM search? Yeah, he looks like Ryan Wasilo to me.
You mentioned, and he does, you mentioned probably doesn't have the guns that Ryan Wasilo has, but you mentioned the path that Monty McNair has taken. He started in 2007. Again, he's with Daryl Morey. He was with Daryl Morey in the Houston Rockets his entire career. He started as a senior analyst. After about 6 years, he was promoted to the director of basketball operations in 2013. And this is where titles get funny. He was promoted to the director of basketball operations in 2013. This was by the Houston Rockets. And then he was promoted to vice president of basketball operations in 2015. In my mind, director sounds higher then vice president, but I guess it doesn't matter. But he went from vice president of basketball operations to being, quote, promoted to assistant general manager. So titles are really funny in the NBA. But his last role was alongside of Daryl Morey. And Daryl Morey is a very... I've been trying to find the right word. I didn't even have the right word in our show meeting. He's not... But he's out there. Like, you know who Daryl Morey is. Like, and he
would
takes
say
chances.
Eccentric?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who puts together like a report on foul calls, you're probably, you know, that's different. But, it speaks to that. I was going to say the famous report. Perhaps it's better worded as the infamous report.
Right.
But that is an analytical brain. That's what Daryl Morey is. That's what Daryl Morey's front office has been. They have been very analytical. And that flies in stark contrast to what the Sacramento Kings had before. I don't know what you classify Vlade as. I don't know what you classify Peja as. The only word that comes to my mind is unqualified. I don't know what you measure his ability to run a team as or what style he had to run a team other than I played basketball, I should be able to put together a basketball team.
Yeah.
Houston has always operated differently. And at this time of year, because it's playoff time, Kenny, and the Western Conference Finals are about to start and the Houston Rockets aren't involved, we make our jokes, right? We make our jokes about James Harden and about Mike D'Antoni and about the Houston Rockets overall. But the fact is, they're a winning franchise, and they've been winning for a while. Daryl Morey rolled the dice, and he was able to get James Harden out of Oklahoma City a year earlier than James Harden needed to get out of Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. He was able to get Chris Paul. It didn't result in a championship. By the way, the Golden State Warriors were ascending at about the same time that the Houston Rockets were. And he felt like, for whatever reason, the James Harden, Chris Paul dynamic wasn't going to work. So he rolled the dice again and went and got Russell Westbrook.
Now, with that's Monty the one that's not a good look.
You don't think so? Why not?
That's not a good look. The contract, where Russ is in his career, being tied to all that.
Please tell me more about where Russell Westbrook is in his career. All third team NBA. That means
he's still very good, but he's not. So here's what I mean by that. He's not what he was. And also, when you talk about their style of play, to me, I know he had numbers or whatever. Clearly not a good fit for their style, and it kind of bore out that way. Is that bared out? I don't know. Don't pay me no mind on that word. But it played out that way, that in the playoffs, that you basically didn't have to guard Russell Westbrook.
I'm gonna be thinking about bored or bared for about 20 minutes. So if I if I space out, that's why I'm thinking about those two words. I hear you, I guess. You know, and so you wonder how much input Monty McNair had in that. Like, okay, and I genuinely wonder with these two, meaning McNair and Morey, was it like, okay, let's run the numbers? Because, I mean, think about it. You acquired a guy who had averaged a triple-double in the previous seasons? Like, I don't even remember at this point. He made it so common. Mm-hmm. And okay. Well, if we can get the ball out of James Harden's hands and create more space for him, that would actually result in more points for Russell Westbrook and more points for James Harden. But there's no evidence that ever, like, James Harden likes to have the ball in his hands. Like, he likes to be the facilitator. Hell, James Harden was the leader in assists like 2 years ago in the league. So that's a fair criticism. I'd love to know the thinking that went into that. Chris Paul, we see, is the ultimate distributor. He's the ultimate floor general. So I can see that, you know, dynamic. That seemed to be a more, I don't know if it started or ended this way, but it seemed to have, at least, if nothing else, evolved into a more personal issue as far as to why, you know, Chris Paul's time there didn't work out.
Right.
And, you know, it'll be fascinating to see where that team goes now. It'll be fascinating to see, you know, who Daryl Morey brings into that position, because I'd love to know. That'd be one of the questions I'd love to ask him. Is, you know, how much influence, you know, what were you and Daryl Morey's conversations like when it came to acquiring guys like Chris Paul? What was it like when it came to, hey, what if we got rid of Clint Capella and everyone on our team was 6'3", you know what I mean, or 6'4"? Like, you know, because somebody had to have, because we talk about this all the time, and of course it was spoke about it ad nauseum over the last, you know, week or so, but who in the meeting brought up, like, hey, maybe you can't win in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can't win against Anthony Davis. Maybe you can't win against, you know, LeBron James, who's, what is he, 6'9", 6'10", and he's controlled on the floor. Like, maybe you can't win when our lineup is that small.
Right.
But, you know, those are just meetings we're not privy to.
And these are the things that I'm on the same page as you, Damien, that I'm really interested to know how much say he had in that, how much he believed in that, how much he had to just kind of go along. Because while I was thinking about this all night and all morning, well, not all night and all morning, okay, I wasn't obsessed with it, but a lot of the night and a lot of the morning, is I wanted to make sure, as I think about what Monty McNair might bring to Sacramento, not to put his failures, or not his failures, but Daryl Morey's failures, in my opinion, in his philosophies, clearly on McNair, because that would be unfair. Because there was a lot of times where, I'm going to just be honest, I don't know who I'm speaking for. I know I'm speaking for myself. I feel like there's a lot of people that feel the same way, that absolutely hated the way that the Rockets play basketball.
Oh,
absolutely
for sure.
Hated their philosophy.
Hated the way the Rockets played basketball? Or hated the way that James Harden played basketball?
The 63s, like, sometimes it was like, what are we doing? What is this? You know, passing up a clear layup to kick it out to a three-point shooter just because that's what the percentages say is a higher a more important shot? Like, I wouldn't even say a three-pointer is a higher percentage than a layup, but maybe it's a more, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that.
The analytics say that 3 points is more than two.
Yeah. But
that's what the analytics say.
But the percentages of making the three is lower than making the layup, right?
Okay,
abolishing a low post game, abolishing a mid-range game, things of that nature. These are the things that I would put at the feet of Daryl Morey. And it would be unfair of me to say, well, Monty comes from Daryl Morey, that he absolutely believes everything. It could be a situation where he was like, if I had my team, I'd probably do things a little different, but I'm a roll with Daryl because he's the boss. We don't know that. He may do things completely different, but there are things in what the Houston Rockets have done in the last few years that I'm not particularly a fan of. But this also goes into like Paul George, what we talked about yesterday. While almost everything, aside from the Chris Paul thing, I like that, but everything else Houston has done, it ain't going to get it done in the playoffs. Like, it's not. Like, you're not winning a championship like that. It's been proven completely.
Mm-hmm.
But like Paul George, let's get to the playoffs and figure it out when we get there here in Sacramento, right?
You know what I'm saying? I swear, if Cole calls and starts talking about Paul George, man, I'm never going to forgive you for that. I'm never going to forgive you for that. Here's an interesting line. I think this is worth pointing out. Your points are taken. Like, I understand what you mean. I never had a problem with the way the Rockets played basketball. I just hated the way that James Harden. There's a lot of stuff that I really dislike about James Harden's game. I think this is a really important line. And I mentioned, you know, Jason Jones at 12:25. I mentioned Damon Bruce at 1 o'clock and James Hamm at 1:30. We want to hear from you as well. Like, this is your show. This is your time. It felt like people were really, really happy last night, and then, you know, maybe not as happy this morning. And we'll explain why in just a couple of minutes when we get to Joe Dumars' involvement. But I want to focus on Monty McNair for a minute, and I want to focus on this particular quote from Daryl Morey, who we were talking about when he was promoted, he being Monty McNair, when he was promoted to the assistant general manager role in 2018. Daryl Morey said, "Monty has been absolutely critical to the success of the Rockets over this long tenure. This is the line that really got my attention. His unique combination of analytical skills and ability to work with our coaching staff was a key driver in our record-breaking season last year." Again, this was 2018. He was referencing 2017. That line just absolutely stands out to me. His analytical skills and his ability to work with our coaching staff.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's really important to me. And it depends on how you look at it as being really important. I look at it as, you know, he saw what they had and he worked with the coaching staff to make it work with what they had. Somebody else might look at it as, well, he needs a coach that sees things the way he sees it.
And well,
that's how.
Let me give you another line of this. McNair is involved with, this is a quote, "all avenues of player evaluation, including trade, free agency, and the draft. Over the past four seasons, McNair has worked closely with the coaching staff to provide on-court strategy and analysis along with opponent preparation." This feels really, really unique for a general manager. We're going to talk more about this. We mentioned the highs. We mentioned the lows. Joe Dumars, he still has a role with the Sacramento Kings, and that has left a lot of Kings fans uncomfortable. We'll explain why. 916-349-1320. If you want to connect with us, we are just getting started here. It's D'Lo and KC on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Jason Jones of The Athletic set to join us here at 12:25. We'll get the details on how this hiring unfolded. We'd love to hear from you as well. 916-349-1320. So, Monty McNair is the new head of basketball operations for the Sacramento Kings. Now, that wasn't the only news that came out regarding the Kings this morning. The other one involved a chief strategy officer. This, of course, is Joe Dumars. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of question about what Joe Dumars' involvement was during this hiring process, and there's a lot of questions about why Joe Dumars is still involved. understandably so, because I think people are looking at this like, well, wait a minute. If he's still in this capacity of having some sort of influence with the organization, what's to stop him from running Monty McNair out of town the same way that he ran Vlade out of town? I think there's a number of different ways to look at this, Kenny, that we can jump into. But what was your initial feeling when you saw that, hey, Joe Dumars sticking around and he's got an official title now that's not advisor?
Right. I didn't have any problem with it. I know a lot of people were kind of up in arms with it, and they're, you know, they feel like they were happy last night and then they saw this morning and now same old Kings. Like, I didn't get that feeling at all. I mean, the initial reports were, when Vlade stepped down and everything, was that Joe Dumars didn't want the GM job. He didn't want the day-to-day grind. He wanted to be the godfather, you know, the overseer, you know, the Pat Riley, Jerry West type figure. And, you know, a couple things happened with him not interviewing. I know we thought, you know, then he became a candidate and his status with the team became a little murky at that point. But at the end of the day, it seems like this is what he wanted all along. This is where he wanted to be at. And you said something, and I'm not saying that you necessarily believe this. You can tell me if you're wrong or whatever.
Okay.
That he got Vlade up out of here. I don't think that was the case.
No. Okay. No. I don't think Vivek did it on his own. I don't think Vivek did. But I guess that maybe I'm framing this wrong. Like, is the question, okay, who called who into a room and said, maybe we should consider making a change? Did Vivek call Joe into a room, or did Joe call Vivek into a room?
I feel like Vivek called Joe.
I think that's probably accurate.
Be a part of this. And Joe was like, okay, cool. Well, let's talk to Vlade about it. And Vlade said, I'm not cool with it. Vivek was like, all right, well, you got to go. And Joe, now you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's how it went down. And, I mean, there's always confusion with the Kings and how things go down. So this is nothing different. But I think even with Vlade there, I don't think it was to be like, you know, I'm going to just nitpick everything that you do, Vlade, and I'm going to do all this. But I want to be that Pat Riley guy. I want the buck to stop with me. I don't know if the buck necessarily stops with him now.
Yeah,
but he's got influence. We know that. He's got Vivek's ear.
And I think Vivek is the one who's starting to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because this is Kenny's like, yeah, duh. Like, what are you talking about? This is the third general manager in 7 years. You know, it was Pete D'Alessandro, and everybody's got their feelings about that. Vlade infiltrated Pete D'Alessandro in what feels like a very similar way that Joe Dumars has infiltrated Vlade Divac. And now we've got a situation, okay, Pete gone, Vlade gone. Now we've got, you know, Monty McNair is here, and people all of a sudden with Joe Dumars, I don't know if people thought, okay, once the process was done, Joe Dumars was going to be gone. I don't even know what I thought what was going to happen with Joe Dumars when this was all over.
Right.
Trajan Langdon said thank you, but no thank you. Mm-hmm. Adam Simon said thank you, but no thank you. And then Sam Amick tweeted, Jason Jones, who's going to join us here in about 3 minutes, and Sam worked closely on a lot of the reporting revolving the involving the Sacramento Kings. And Sam had tweeted, oh, well, Joe, in a surprising twist or something like that, or an interesting plot twist, Joe Dumars isn't a part of the interviews. It's like, oh, okay. And then we got down to the three finalists, who are the only three candidates that didn't remove themselves from the conversation after Calvin Booth did the same thing. And he was a part of the second round of interviews.
Right.
Okay, wait a minute. What? Like, why wasn't he a part of the first round and not the second round? Like, it's confusing.
And
the whole
setup
is a little confusing.
And, you know, while it's been reported that, you know, the relationship between Dumars and the people that were being interviewed was a point of concern for some of those guys. At the same time, they had real reasons besides Joe Dumars to not want to come to Sacramento and leave their situations. We outlined them, you know, completely.
100%.
Like, Trajan Lane in New Orleans, Simon in Miami, Calvin Booth in Denver. Like, these are top level franchises in the league right now. And New Orleans has the potential. So it's a little unfair to be like, well, because Dumars was around, that's why they could, you know, these guys were dropping out. And I think that's where a lot of people are going to, and I think that's a little unfair to everybody involved.
I think so too. I think the fact is, if Monty McNair succeeds,
none of it
we
matters.
Don't. but you know, with all of that, with the Kings, I feel like you can always do this. You can always go, but Mike Malone wasn't doing too bad, and he was shown the door. And I think the Mike Malone thing always sticks in people's heads. Let's bring in your partner on the J Street Vibes podcast, and of course, the Kings beat writer for The Athletic, Jason Jones.
Before we start with you, Jason, can we get you to take 5 minutes away from slandering the Clippers to actually let's talk about some Kings? I mean, you got memes for the last 48 hours. Can we pull you away from that? Can we pull you away from that?
I have nothing to say about that team that borrowed Staples Center for the JV. I have nothing to say about them.
Well,
I have nothing to say about that team that should probably move to San Diego or Barstow.
See drive-bys. I'm getting out the way now because I know the drive-bys are coming.
I think we know who started the petition. we'll explain the petition. For what it's worth, Jason, I find many of the memes, particularly the Get Out one, extremely funny. Please continue. Let's try this again. Jason Jones of The Athletic and the J Street Vibes podcast. Monty McNair, Jason, how did we get here? It felt like the last time we talked, Sachin Gupta might be the guy. Monty McNair gets the hire. How did the last few days develop in this process?
Typical Kings thing is when you think you know what's going to happen, something else happens. Yeah. And from everything I can gather, then Monty really won over Vivek, and that's who you have to win over. Hmm. And by doing that, he got the job. And, I mean, of course, there's a whole lot going on around it. You know, there were questions about what Joe Dumars was going to do and how much involvement he would or will have. But I think a lot of that is kind of like this PTSD. Like, no one – with the Kings, you kind of expect, okay, now where is the part where this gets messed up? Like, it can't be this simple that you guys had a coach, you know, a GM search, interviewed more than one person, and then hired someone. there's got to be a twist somewhere. So, but I mean, I think I even tweeted earlier that people are celebrating this like this is the greatest thing ever. I'm like, Monty hasn't done a thing yet. We don't know what's going to happen, but it just kind of shows you how messed up things are. Where people are just like, I'm glad the team interviewed more than one person.
Yeah. Well, they've been known not to interview people. Hi, Luke Walton.
Yeah.
Hope you're listening.
Hey, hi, Vlade. I mean.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
You know, the Kings have had this thing where guys just kind of, like, show up and then, wow, they've got a job. And we don't know what exactly he's going to do, but he's got the job. So
I feel like you just described Joe Dumars.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing about Joe, Yeah, the thing about Joe was that, you know, I know he was actually hired last June, but it's not like, you know, Joe, I won't say he had, you know, they knew about Joe. I mean, it wasn't like they talked to Joe for the first time last June. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so it's just kind of, you know, it's just, and I think a lot of people are, instead of people are saying, oh, God, not Joe, what's Joe doing? But there's also this, if Joe Dumars isn't talking to Vivek, where are we today? We don't know. So I think, you know, and I cut Joe some slack. You know, it's not – it feels like people are just saying, oh, God, Joe Dumars. I'm like, I've never seen a guy – yeah, he had some picks that didn't go well, but the man did win an NBA championship. And he's, you know, give him a – you know, I'm willing to accept Joe having some role because, to me, one of the flaws of the previous regime was that there wasn't someone else there who – you could, you know, bounce ideas off with experience. You had a bunch of people who were new with their job, all trying to do the job, and I think you saw with the results that doesn't work either.
Yeah.
Hey, Kenny, before you jump in, I think the apprehension around Joe Dumars is it feels like there's another buffer between Monty McNair and Vivek Ranadive. I think what people are concerned about is it doesn't feel like a clear cut, like it's Monty and it's reporting to Vivek. Like with Joe lingering around there, I think people are concerned, like, oh, there's going to be more meddling, or oh, someone else is going to be involved. Similar to what Vlade did. You talked about PTSD a minute ago. I don't think that line of thinking is wrong, because it's what Vlade did to Pete, and then what Joe, well, whatever combination of Joe and Vivek wound up doing to Vlade.
Well, I completely get it. I mean, I completely get it. It's just, yeah, I completely get it. But I'd rather, if I'm going to take my chances on a guy offering input, I'd rather have Joe offering input. And, and I'm trying to look at it from this perspective, too. What if Joe ends up being the guy who keeps Vivek from saying no? So, you know, maybe I'm trying to be, optimistic just because things have been so different. But I'm saying maybe having someone who can kind of be a buffer between the decision maker and Monty and Vivek kind of say, hey, before you go this way with it, here's what Monty's trying to do. And maybe that could be the case. But I completely understand that there's going to be apprehension. There's going to be questions just because the setup has always been kind of murky. It's like, Vlade had that job for months and Pete hadn't been fired and no one really knew what Vlade's actual job was. So, I mean, I completely get the I completely get it. So, even more recently, Vlade was the GM, but Brandon Williams handled a lot of the day-to-day things that the GM would handle. Mm. So there's always been kind of this ambiguity between roles there. So I think if anything, if Monty McNair can come in and establish some structure and order, and Vivek can kind of just talk to – maybe Joe's the guy he's been to or whatever the case may be. Maybe they're in the right direction, but it hasn't been 24 hours yet, so I'm gonna hold off on going extreme either way.
That's a good idea, Jason. it hasn't been 24 hours. Just hold off a little bit. That's not necessarily a bad thing. You guys got me thinking here about non-interviews happening. Did Pete D'Alessandro interview? Did he just pop up? I can't remember. I really can't remember.
Hey, man, me and Peter, good. So I know.
No, it's not even a knock on him. I'm trying to think like back to that time.
Back then there were other guys. There was Chris Wallace, who was with the Grizzlies.
Okay, I remember Chris Wallace's name.
Which was kind of funny. There was the report a couple of days ago of Sachin coming in with McNair under him. People forget with Pete. There was an idea of bringing in Chris Wallace from Memphis to be the VP, and Pete would work under him. Mm. So that was talked about. Travis Schlenk, who's now in Atlanta, was looked at. They had the issue then was that you'd already hired your coach. Mm. So it was kind of like you got the coach in before. Speaking of PTSD, Monty inherited once again the person. Every time they've hired a GM, he's inherited a coach. Vlade inherited George Karl. Pete inherited Malone. Now Monty's inheriting Luke Walton. So, there's still clearly some work to do, but, I'm kind of just used to it. I covered Al Davis' Raiders. So, I'm used to just things that don't make sense somehow making sense or not making sense at some point.
You talk about PTSD. If someone ever does a PowerPoint presentation for Jason Jones here on the Kings, he's going to lose it.
If I see a projector, I'm walking out.
Say a projector is
yeah, there it is. There it is. You brought up coaching. Is there a mandate? Luke is here. Luke is definitely the coach in the upcoming season when it starts, perhaps in December or January.
What time is it? 12:33. As of right now, Luke is definitely the coach.
Okay.
This thing, I think part of the thing is, financially.
Yeah.
You got he's only in the second year of a deal, and you just paid a lot. That's a big part of it that people forget about. We are in a pandemic. The team has lost money.
Yeah.
And. These aren't the Warriors where you have a cash cow like Chase Center, where you just moved in and got that big influx of cash. So they've got to consider all that. And I think even if you have another year of Luke or Luke, you evaluate whatever the roster ends up being. That's another thing. We don't know how this team is going to look. We don't know if Monty might not like a single player on this roster. So it was, there's so much to be sorted out. And you have the draft next month, and yeah, you got to decide if you're going to extend De'Aaron Fox. Do you give, you know, do you keep Bogey? Do you, you know, there's just so many different moving parts. So, yeah, this is going to be an interesting couple of months for sure.
Maybe we can furlough Luke.
Okay. leave Luke alone. Let him earn his salary.
All right. I'm on timeout.
Clippers, man.
I'm on timeout. I'm sorry, Kenny. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this, Jason, and this is completely your opinion here. If you have insight, that would be even greater, but I don't think anybody has insight less than 24 hours after this hiring. But based on where he came from in Houston, they like to jack up the threes and all this other stuff. Do you feel like it increases the possibility that Buddy Hield stays in Sacramento?
I think it does. I just think just based on what you need, you know, yeah, you may not like the contract, you know, but he, you know, for all of Buddy's, you know, the knocks on Buddy, maybe, you know, he talks a little too much, you know, he doesn't defend enough, you know, his ball handling and all that. Buddy can shoot. Can flat out shoot. The guy I wonder about is De'Aaron. He's not a knockdown three guy right now. And everyone was saying, well, we'd love to see De'Aaron in a D'Antoni type offense or that style of play. The primary thing in that type of offense is your point guard's got to be able to shoot the three. So I'm curious as to what Monty thinks about De'Aaron and De'Aaron's projection and kind of where he sees De'Aaron fitting long term, because you know, you're in a position right now where you could extend him right now, but I wouldn't be shocked if Monty says, you know what, I just got here. Let's just wait.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I'm really curious to see what he thinks about that, what he thinks about Marvin, you know, because some of the guys, you know, I think guys like Buddy, I think Bogey would fit. I even think Harrison fits that. But he's curious to see what the two young guys, the two guys that Vlade was really most interested in, how Monty feels about them.
Interesting.
How much was how much was Vivek the guy who pushed this through? Like, because we've read, you know, Joe Dumars was involved in the second round of interviews, and we read that Vivek's son was also a part of the process. How much of this final selection of Monty McNair had to do with Vivek Ranadive?
Oh, this is Vivek's guy. I mean, at the end of the day, this is Vivek's guy. This is the guy that Vivek wanted. So if it doesn't work out, I mean, in the past, the Kings have played the whenever something goes wrong, you know, pass the blame game. The Kings' tradition is whoever's not there anymore, it was all their fault.
Yeah.
You know, but, in this one, as it's been with other decisions, this is all on Vivek. So this is the guy he wanted. Vivek has always, you know, admired or been a fan of the Daryl Morey tree, which, you know, the Sam Hinkie tree. He's always been a fan of it. So he's got his kind of, you know, I don't know if you want to call him his Morey disciple. I don't know what you want to call him, but he's got someone who came up under Daryl Morey. So now that you've got that, you finally, you know, you wanted it for years. You finally got it. Let's see what happens with it.
Jason Jones, J Street Vibes Podcast, and of course the Kings beat writer for The Athletic. It is never dull with the Sacramento Kings. Jason, we appreciate you as always, my man.
No problem. Anytime, guys. And I'll be there when the Clippers move to Temecula.
I was just about to tell you, Damian, you forgot his other title. He's the official Clipper slanderer. You know what I mean? And he definitely
got one
on the way out.
No, I'm not. They slandered themselves. I told you they were going to lose Game 7. They slandered themselves. And then their comments after the game were even worse.
Yeah, their comments after the game were pretty. Absolutely. I guess we'll save if he's scared about the Padres for the next appearance of Jason.
No,
Jones.
No. Okay, we're not going to do this right now. You know, we're having a good day. the Dodgers beat them last night. Dodgers beat them yesterday. You know, they had a little tough one. You know, hey, Dodgers beat them. So you know, we're going to be positive this year.
Okay. All right. We appreciate you, Jason. Thank you, my man.
All right, y'all. Y'all take care.
He said we're not doing this today. You know what that means.
He's nervous.
He's worried about the Padres.
He sees them coming in the rear view for sure. Oh,
that is so great.
There was a lot of good stuff in there, though, man. A lot of good stuff. I like his look on Joe Dumars.
I was going to say, let's go back to that for a minute, because I'm following, you know, people are and thank you to everybody who's listening and interacting on Twitter, man. We really appreciate it, at D'Lo and KC. That seems to have been a real sticking point this morning, with the vocal portion of Kings fans, was the Joe Dumars thing. I really don't have a problem with it. I don't think Joe Dumars has done anything egregious. And I'm in the line of thinking with you and Jason, in that I don't think Joe said, hey, let me holla at your player. I don't think he went Teddy Long on him and said, hey, you know what I mean?
Shout out to Teddy Long. Hold on, player.
let me holla at you. Like, I got an idea. Let's go ahead and dump this big fella. Like, I don't think that's what happened. Yeah. I also think you might be a little bit off in your thinking that Vivek was scrolling Twitter one day and thought, damn it, I've got to get rid of Vlade. I think there was a combination of just a whole bunch of events in which he maybe thought about Vlade like I think about Luke. Uh-huh. And that's, we know that this isn't working. This isn't our long-term solution. We messed up with this contract. We've got to figure it out right now.
Yeah.
And obviously none of us know. We're all speculating here at this point. We're trying to make educated guesses based on what we read in The Athletic and what we hear from Jason, and James Hamm is going to be with us here at 1:30, but I don't have a problem with Joe Dumars being involved. And if you want to talk about his track record, he's the first black general manager. This is mind boggling. He's the first black GM to win first black executive to win an NBA championship.
Wow.
That was in the 2000s.
Yeah. He constructed that team.
We're talking about the NBA. Like, we're talking about the NFL.
Right. Right.
That's wild.
Yeah, he constructed that team. And I guess, Joe Dumars, being brought back is a clear sign that Kings Twitter does not run the
right
Kings
there you
office.
Go
it
yeah.
could be a sign that Vivek listens to D'Lo and KC, though, you know, because he's reacting to the criticism of the criticism that maybe I came out. So he could be a big fan. What's up, Vivek, man? You know, he could be a big fan of D'Lo and KC. But I can't lie.
I hope we're minus one listener today. I hope Luke does. I hope Luke's not listening.
I'm gonna tell Luke to listen.
I hope Luke listens. I hope we have Luke Walton on the show this year. We got a great relationship with the Kings. I'm just not like he. I didn't get it. I think Jason was just talking about you. We were joking. But not I, the most important thing Jason Jones said in that conversation was one of the first things he said, PTSD.
Yeah,
we're so conditioned to something going ill. We're so conditioned to something being bad. I think I'm that way with Luke Walton, because I look at this like, yo, and I know you have your feelings about Monty Williams and all of that stuff. My bigger frustration with Luke Walton getting the job is it was the no. It's like there's a sign in the Kings business office that says no interviews needed. Like, come on in. And Luke just walked in and got the job after not being successful with LeBron James on his roster. And I understand that's a unique dynamic and the difficulties. There are plenty of very good coaches who did not succeed with LeBron James on their roster. But I just didn't get how he just walked in here like, oh, I'm going to be the guy who's gonna take this franchise from, you know, the 39 wins that Dave Yeager built up last year, and I'm going to be the one who sends them to the playoffs.
Yeah,
like why? What evidence leads you to believe that that's going to happen?
I completely understand that, and I know that was Vlade's guy from like January of
right.
that year, right?
Right.
And while I do feel like there are things that Luke does that I like, and I think he deserves a little time, if I was like, yo, Dave Yeager's out of here, I would not have been like, Luke Walton, that's the guy I'm getting.
Yeah.
Like that. Right. I don't know if he's good or not, but I don't subscribe to that theory. He's going to change it around without even talking to him or anything like that.
He's not a no interview needed candidate.
Exactly.
Or a no, you know, coaching search candidate. There are guys out there that have that stature. He's not one of them.
Yeah.
And that's not, he just hasn't built up that equity yet. We're going to step out. We're going to come back. There's plenty more Kings to talk about. We've got to talk about the actual roster, by the way, because Monty McNair is going to have some decisions to make, not just informing his staff, but in informing this roster for the upcoming season. So we'll do that, and we would love to hear from you. 916-349-1320. Plus, Damon Bruce is going to join us at the top of the hour here on ESPN 1320.
Now, back to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
Excited to have Damon Bruce join us for the first time. He'll be with us at 1 o'clock. Of course, Damon Radowankowski each and every single day here on ESPN 1320 at 2 o'clock, plus James Hamm coming up at 1:30. I can't lie. I spent a bulk of that commercial break laughing at Jason Jones and his very obvious fear of the San Diego Padres.
Oh, yeah.
He did not want anything to do with that conversation regarding the Padres.
He sees them coming. Damian, this sounds crazy. All right, I know it does, especially for a team that's in the wild card. But I talked to you in the pre-show meeting. I said, there's a train of thought that I'd rather face the Dodgers if I was the Giants than the Padres.
Yeah.
They just kind of match up a little better with the Dodgers. I think the Padres, like, if they played the Padres in the first round, which it looks like it might happen, that might be a two-game sweep. Easy work for the Padres.
I don't other than, you know, the Kings, obviously, which I try not to root for publicly, but I don't really have favorite teams anywhere. But I really am enjoying the hell out of the Padres. Like, I enjoy the fact that they irritate people, which I think is like a, you know, Russell Westbrook, for example. Right, you know what I mean? Right, like I used to love Deion Sanders and Michael Irvin. Like, I've always really liked the guys that have been agitators.
Push the limits.
The entire Padres team, they feel like agitators.
Yeah.
And Jason, we're not doing this today. It's going to be one of my favorite lines from the first month of the show. I'm having a good day.
Just
we're
for that, I want them to play each other at some point. I'd love to see that, just to see Jason squirm for a little bit.
We've spent a lot of time talking about the Kings. We're going to continue talking about the Kings. We're going to shift gears here in a few minutes and talk about the 49ers. Trent Williams was on with Damon Radowankowski yesterday. I want you to hear some things he said about Jimmy Garoppolo. And, of course, as we mentioned, Damon Bruce is going to be with us week two, believe it or not. That's the crazy thing, man. We wait and we wait and we wait and we wait for football season to get here, and then it gets here, and it is over in the blink of an eye. Week one just ended. Week two begins tonight. That's the beauty of Thursday night football games. It is the juggernaut. It is the clash of the Titans. It is two former Heisman Trophy winners. It's Baker Mayfield, and it is Joe Burrow. It is the Cleveland Browns versus the Cincinnati Bengals.
You just said week two starts tonight. Does it really?
Yeah.
Does it really with that matchup?
It's two Heisman Trophy winners. You know that went through their mind when they booked this game. Two Heisman Trophy winners on a Thursday night. The Browns and the Bengals.
Week two starts on Sunday, Damian.
Okay. Okay. Well, it certainly does for the San Francisco 49ers, and we'll talk about their matchup with the New York Jets when Damon Bruce joins us. We'll spend some moments. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we actually got an update here on the long-lasting question of today's show on whether it's bore out or bear out. Mm-hmm. All right. My Uncle Danny's out there in the Bay Area in Santa Clara listening to the show. Shout out to Uncle Danny. He's in the educational field, and he says it is bear out.
Thank you, Uncle
bear
Danny.
Bear out is what it is. The correct usage.
We appreciate you, Uncle Danny, because that was going to bug me.
I forgot what I even used that sentence in earlier.
I don't remember the sentence either, but I remember the controversy. I remember the controversy that ensued. Joe Dunmars isn't the only guy sticking around. According to we didn't dive into it with Jason Jones, but according to Jason and Sam's report on The Athletic, so is Ken Cantinella. I'm actually good with that.
Yeah, I like that.
I really, really like Ken Cantinella. I've had the pleasure of having a handful of conversations with him before games. I really enjoy talking to him. And I mean, to be able to work the salary cap the way that he did with contracts, like, and you can feel however you want to about Dwayne Dedman actually being a Sacramento King, about Trevor Reza actually being a Sacramento King, the way he was able to work those contracts worked really well, because there was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, that the Kings thought they were going to have to fit two max contracts under their salary cap, in the obvious one being De'Aaron Fox, and then, you know, I don't know how people feel about Marvin Bagley anymore. He certainly doesn't seem, at this point, a max player. Hopefully that changes in the very new future. But Ken Cantinella had to operate around all of that. Mm-hmm. And he was able to do it, I think, very successfully. Whether the signings were successful or not, I don't know that that's up to him. I think he gets a stack of papers thrown in front of him with some names on it and some dollar figures and says, hey, how can we make this work?
Yeah.
At least in my head, that's how it goes.
Right.
And then he makes it worth. I'm actually really good with Ken Cantinella still being a part of the front office.
Absolutely, man. I'm on the same page. And I think he's really good at his job. And above that, I feel like he's well-respected around the league. And I think that is paramount for the Kings and what they're trying to do building this franchise up is to have people that are well-respected, well-connected in the league. And I think he checks off both of those boxes. Plus, like you said, I think he's good at his job as far as making contracts work and things of that nature. So I'm definitely glad that he gets to stay in his front office.
A couple of things coming up for the 1 o'clock hour we want to let you know about. We've talked about the roster. Kenny, we need to kind of talk a little bit. I mean, Bogey's unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. You heard what Jason Jones had to say about De'Aaron Fox and what his potential future may be under this new Monty McNair regime. Buddy and Bogey, you and I both have our feelings about that. Harrison Barnes, he's in the second year of a four-year, $85 million deal. The team has a team option on Nemanja Bjelica. We've got to talk about all of that, plus some of the loan sound from Monty McNair at the Sloan Conference we were able to find, and he's talking about the relationship between coaches and the front office. So we're going to have all of that coming up for you right around 1:17 or so. I want to shift gears here for a few minutes and talk about the San Francisco 49ers practices underway. We're already very well aware that George Kittle not practicing. Mm-hmm. Mohamed Sanu can't practice until Friday. But Trent Williams, arguably the biggest free agent acquisition by the San Francisco 49ers this past offseason. I don't even think he was a free agent acquisition. I think they acquired him through trade, if I remember.
Third and a fifth, I think it was.
Yeah, they acquired him through trade. He was the biggest acquisition from the San Francisco 49ers. He was with Damon Radwanowski yesterday. There's a couple of things that really stood out in the conversation. One, and I'm using this clip specifically because I think it really ties in well to the Sacramento Kings, and it's leaving Washington and coming into San Francisco, which is a winning culture. And he used a word that you love. He talked about the vibe coming in.
The vibe was, I mean, it was night and day difference. You can just tell everybody here is you know, they're comfortable in their own skin, but everybody's here to work. And everybody's close. It's a very close-knit group. You can tell the coaches and the players had outstanding relationships, and the players had outstanding relationships with each other. The locker room is just, it's a joy to be in, to be around. And, that just jumped out to me as soon as I walked into the facility.
And you, winning culture, I mean, he's one of the best there is at his position.
Absolutely.
And what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, and I was really skeptical of John Lynch. I mean, I knew Kyle Shanahan was the guy because I think there was a report, and I hope I'm not out of pocket when I say this. I feel like there was a report. Kyle Shanahan got the job, and John Lynch texted him or called him and was like, "Yo, I'd love to come in." And ultimately, that led to John Lynch becoming the general manager, which immediately looks like, okay, like, this is cool and all. Kyle Shanahan is clearly calling the shots, but it's worked out beautifully for these two, and it's worked out beautifully for the organization.
Absolutely, man. And this is the thing that gives me confidence and gets me excited for not just this year of 49er football, but possibly cementing a legacy in this era. You know what I'm saying? Where you have consistent, you're not going to win every year. You're not going to get to the Super Bowl every year. I understand that. But you look at somebody like the Ravens. For 20 years now, the Ravens have been in the conversation. You know, the Steelers for the last 20 years, probably even further back, they've been in the conversation.
Yeah.
Even more recently, the Seahawks for the last 10 years or so now.
Well, you just
been
named
in the conversation. And that's three what you, that's what you can ask for.
You just named three of the most stable organizations in the NFL.
Yeah.
Obviously, New England is a part of that conversation as well.
Obviously,
but,
New England.
You know, what Ozzie Newsome did as the general manager of Baltimore is just, I still think it's one of the most amazing things in football. Like how he had a vision for what he wanted that team to be and Harbaugh was able to run with. And I every year, for some reason, I'm amazed by that team. Man. Every single year.
And if this 49ers franchise can get to that point, get back to that point where every year you're in the discussion. You're in play. I definitely take that. You know, I would definitely take that. And I feel like that's what they're creating here with a Kyle Shanahan. He's young enough. John Lynch, I know there's actually been quotes of John Lynch saying he doesn't plan on being here that long. He just doesn't know if he wants to do the GM job that long. Hope he reconsiders because I think he's at the very least very solid at what he does. And he's created that culture, those two together. So, yeah, I love to hear those type of quotes from Trent Williams about seeing just a clear difference between one franchise and what he's seeing now with the 49ers.
I'll save one for you. We're probably not going to have time to run it before Damon joins us. Maybe we'll save it for the pre-show coming up on maybe we'll save it for game day coming up on Sunday. But he's talking about your coach, Kyle Shanahan. I want to play this clip for you before Damon jumps on with us. He's talking about Jimmy Garoppolo and the criticism that Jimmy has gotten over the last couple of days.
Because I think everybody knows what type of player he is, and everybody can see it. We see it every day. You know, obviously, Jimmy is he's an easy target for a lot of criticism just because he is the quarterback of the team, and he's clean cut guy. He don't really have anything, you know, negative to say about him. He's just, you know, it's easy for people to just pick him out, you know, because he's not going to respond to it. He's going to keep coming to work every day and doing his due diligence to be the best quarterback he can be for us. And we all believe in him. We got a saying here that I got your back, and you won't find anybody in this locker room to tell you different. We all got his back. We understand that quarterbacks take the most heat when you win and lose. And if we would have won, Jimmy would be the savior on Monday morning. But when we lose, we understand that he's going to be the first one, and then it'll trickle down. That's just the nature of the business, but we don't really get caught up in that.
That's Pro Bowler right there. 7-time Pro Bowler Trent Williams right there talking about his quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. And I wonder sometimes, listen, what does Jimmy have to do? You know what I mean? Because in football, you say, "Hey, it's about winning games. You got to win games in this league." And okay, yeah, Jimmy's done that, but he still gets a ton of criticism.
He's literally having to win the Super Bowl, and that's extremely unfair. Man. But he literally has to win it to get respect, not to just. Some people got to win the Super Bowl to get, you know, to be looked at as one of the legends. This guy's got to win the Super Bowl just to get respect.
Yeah, that's it. You're listening. Yeah, you're listening to D'Lo and KC on KIFM West Sacramento, KRX QHD2 Sacramento, a radio.com sports station and driven by Lashers Elk Grove Dodge. Let's bring in Damon Bruce. Real happy to have Damon on here for the first time. Of course, the host of Damon Ratto and Kolsky, which you can get each weekday here at 2 o'clock. Damon, thanks so much for joining us. We were just talking about we just played great interview, by the way, with Trent Williams yesterday. We just played his clips there talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. Why do you think Jimmy gets so much criticism?
Well, it just comes with the position. And guys, first of all, congrats on the show. It's great to be on with you. Thanks so much for having me. But look, this is the life he has chosen. You want to be a quarterback in the NFL, the spotlight is going to be on you. You're going to get probably way too much credit for wins you don't deserve, and you'll get way too much blame in losses that really weren't on you. That's the way it is. And, you know, as you guys were just talking about, it feels like the only thing some sports fans out there understand are the championship trophy being hoisted over the head. Like, that's all there is to it. And without that, you're nothing. And with that, you're everything. Jimmy is good. Jimmy was great on third down last year. Jimmy was a completed pass to Emmanuel Sanders away from winning a Super Bowl. I mean, it was that close. But he was bad in week one. And we always overreact, either be positively or negatively to week one results. And he was extra bad in week one. The 49ers were terrible on third down. He did not get it out. He did not see his reads. He does not read his progressions. And I just think that as everybody now thinks that they're a coach and can break down X's and O's, even a pedestrian fan can see, you know, there are guys open that he just doesn't see and doesn't miss. And that's always going to be criticized. He looks good against the Jets this week. We all know it's going to die down a little bit, but there's no hiding, especially when you're a quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers.
Right. And I was just about to mention that. Obviously, I think a lot of people would probably say quarterback of the Cowboys is probably the biggest position, maybe in all of the NFL. Quarterback for the 49ers might be right behind it, and that adds to a lot of the heat in the levels of expectation heaped upon Jimmy Garoppolo, in my opinion.
No doubt. You're standing in the shadow of greatness, and you know, it's officially a long time ago now, but to be able to go from Joe Montana to Steve Young is an embarrassment of riches at the position. You know, those glamour spots, no doubt. It's the 49ers quarterback, Dallas Cowboy, just about anything. Like, that's what Dallas Cowboys work. Yankee shortstop, Bulls or Lakers shooting guard. You know, there are some definite harder to fill spots in all of sports, and Jimmy's definitely in one.
Combined with Damon Bruce with us here on D'Lo and KC, combined with, you know, the news we got about Richard Sherman, we know George Kittle's not practicing this week. How much of what happened on Sunday, like, because I know you've been fielding a ton of calls about this. You guys have been talking a ton about it. How much of, you know, this week has been like overreaction versus like actual concern?
Well, I think it's a touch of both. But the reason why there's actual concern is because if mobile quarterback is going to be your kryptonite, they've got four kryptonite games a year between, you know, they've just lost one of them to Kyler Murray. We know who's coming up in Seattle. Russell Wilson is the, you know, is the model of mobile quarterback right now. And if that's going to be something that the Niners just all of a sudden have an awful lot of problems with, they've got some problems coming up in their future. So there's a concern about that. But there's no doubt there is an overreaction going on. And if they go to New York and look great against the Jets, which is a game they're, you would think that they were set up to look great in, but they're really not. I mean, there's so many injuries. The wide receiver depth is being tested everywhere. The starting cornerbacks, you're already at number three on your depth chart, I think, as far as a second starter goes. So it is going to be more of a challenge in New York. And if the Niners just go out there and win, that's getting the job done. I mean, they're you are what your record says you are, and right now they're a winless football team. Go get that first win, quiet the critics, just feel like you're back on track, and then start building in the right direction as the team gets healthier and players start returning to the sidelines and to the field. What looked like would be a great start to a season quickly turned into all hands on deck, just plug the holes, try to get through it in the earliest month of the year, and nobody really expected that, and that's the NFL.
Yeah. And Damon, you mentioned, you know, having problems with the mobile quarterbacks, and the funny thing about it is, you know, if you can find a way to get past the Kyler Murray, then get past the next big boss in Russell Wilson, if you're fortunate enough to get to the Super Bowl, you may end up facing the ultimate mobile quarterback right now in Lamar Jackson, you know, or something like that. So that would be crazy to see them go up against that. To that point, do you think the lack of sacks and quarterback pressures on week one had more to do with Kyler Murray? Or did we see something, you know, missing on that DeForest line, specifically the loss of DeForest Buckner?
No, there's no doubt that DeForest Buckner exiting that defensive line is a demerit. There's no other way to look at it. But they were getting to their spots. Nick Bosa especially. Javon Kinlaw, I'll tell you, Brian Baldinger, who's a guest on the show often, had a couple of great breakdowns. Look at what Bosa was doing to beat the man in front of him. He's going to have Mekhi Becton making his second ever start in New York in front of him this weekend. I expect Nick Bosa to get a couple of sacks in this game on a much less mobile quarterback that is Sam Darnold. I think Kyler Murray is going to be a big problem, fellas. He has got roll out of the pocket, escapability, that can neutralize any pass rush. I mean, if you are hip-to-hip with Kyler Murray, you've already lost the race because he can just take off. And the Niners, I just think, over-pursued, and they did not get home. It's hard to get home on Kyler Murray. But they did beat players in front of them. Kyler's legs just got him out of so much trouble. I expect a much better defensive line performance this week in New York against, again, Sam Darnold, who's got, you know, a rookie left tackle, and his biggest wide receiver threat is, you know, Breshad Perriman. I mean, let's hold any panic buttons for this D-line until after this week. If no sacks against Sam Darnold is the story, call me back and we'll all panic together. But I think they're going to look a lot better this week.
Well, Kenny's in charge of the panic button. I'm pretty sure he was pretty close to hitting it on Monday. You got a show to get ready for. We don't want to keep you too long. We've been talking a lot of basketball here today. The Kings made their decision in hiring a head of basketball operations in Monty McNair. Golden State Warriors, they got a decision to make of their own. What do you think winds up happening with them sitting there at that number two pick?
There are two players that I absolutely like, and I think you know them both. It's James Wiseman, who is the physical, preordained alpha dog of the class. I mean, he has been the next thing coming at that size and at that weight and at that position for a really, really long time. When you spend your life basically being the top player regarded in your draft, in your class. You're a significant presence about to happen. I love Obi Toppin, though. I really do. I love Obi Toppin. He is a 22-year-old man, and I think that the way the NBA used to be played, there's no doubt a guy like Wiseman would be the clear choice. Who the Warriors are, what they need, and the way the game is being played right now, I could see Obi Toppin being the better fit not only for what the Warriors need, but for the style of game that the NBA is seeing all over the court now. I mean, it's just, it's changing. It's evolving, almost like quarterbacks. We're looking at these mobile guys now. The position is changing and evolving. The NBA's entire sport has changed and evolved. Either one of those guys, I think, would be absolutely fascinating. I could also see them making a deal, looking for a veteran at the right value. But what that would be and who that would be with, I have no idea. Now that it's football season, I'm slammed into football mode. I'll think about basketball like when we get a little closer to the draft.
Yeah, you got a couple more months before that, and you've got a show to get ready for. Thanks for the kind words to begin the conversation. We're happy to be on the team with you, and we'll talk again soon. Damian,
thanks, Damian.
Hey, Damian, Casey, you guys break a leg. Best of luck, and it was a pleasure to be on with you.
Thanks, man.
All right, we appreciate it. That's Damian Bruce, Damian Ratto, and Kolsky. Of course, they're on every weekday here, Monday through Friday, 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock here on ESPN 1320.
Damian mentioned James Wiseman and, you know, how he's basically lived his life as being the number one prospect in his draft and being this guy and how the way the game is being played, we don't know exactly how that's going to translate. You know who he sounds like.
Oh,
Marvin
no. Bagley. What are you doing?
That's exactly Marvin Bagley's life. Marvin Bagley's been a phenom since like 14.
Yeah.
Killing kids in the Drew, not kids, excuse me, killing grown men in the Drew League at like 16 years old.
But I remember, and maybe this just feels so distant at this point, there was talk. Oh, he's really good. Like, but he went to Duke. And sometimes at Duke, like, if you're not, like, shining exceptional, it's like, oh, yeah, no, the kid at Duke is really good. Like, this Marvin Bagley guy, like, he's good. You're going to love him. The caveats that Damon just threw in there when talking about James Wiseman are always going to come into play, and that's probably going to come into play when you're talking about a big God for the next decade or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that much heat on Bagley, though.
Bagley coming out of high school was a phenom. Like, he was Wiseman. Like, how people talked about Wiseman coming out of high school, Bagley was that. And then I'll never forget this. Like, the first, and he kind of continued it throughout the season. It didn't really go down. It was just that Ayton really got a lot of buzz and stuff like that.
And I'm still so baffled as to how that happened, but
yeah,
that's not your point.
I don't know where
that
came from. But I remember... I think you remember the PK Classic, the Phil Knight Classic out in Portland.
Yeah.
And Duke played in it, and Bagley was a monster.
Mm-hmm.
He was a monster. Like, I'm talking like, you guys can look up the stats if you want. I could be wrong, but I'm talking like 35 and 20, 35 and 17. Like, he was a monster. And I remember sitting there, and I thought the Kings would be like, I forgot what happened. I thought they'd be closer to the playoffs or something like that. And I was like, dang, man, I would love to have a guy like Marvin Bagley, but Kings aren't going to be bad enough. Like, he's going to go one or two. And oddly enough, they end up
getting... You were right. He did.
Right. But I just remember thinking he was amazing at Duke. And, I mean, who knows if it translates to the NBA game, if he can stay healthy or whatever the case may be. But I just say all that to say that was the road he was on. You know, at least at the very least early in that college season.
Well, Wiseman, and we were robbed of Wiseman for the most part because of the stuff with Penny and Memphis and all of that. And, you know, the disappearing act that became college basketball, which we've got news on. We've got news on college basketball because why not? Why wouldn't we have news on college basketball? We also got James Hamm. We're going to continue this conversation about the Sacramento Kings and Monty McNair, their new head of basketball operations, when James Hamm joins us at 1:30. Plenty more to come here with D'Lo McKaysee on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
You're listening to D'Lo and Casey. D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320. No. to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
James Hamm, Kings insider for NBC Sports, coming up here at 1:30. Lots more Kings talk. We mentioned before the break, college basketball has a start date, November 25th. A lot of things have changed in college basketball coming up. They've got a start date, which is big news for them, November 25th. They've also restructured things where they'll have coaches will have more time with kids, with student athletes, because they're some practices are going to be broken down. Individual workouts are going to be broken down a little bit, so they're going to have more time together. But it looks like, much like college football is happening, it looks like college basketball is going on.
It's going down, man.
There's a start date. Yeah. I guess that's a start. And it was, we were on yesterday. What we had the tweet regarding Gavin Newsom was speaking, governor of California, Governor Newsom, and he says, yeah, there's no.
Yeah, no problem.
Guideline?
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Why are you putting this on me? Like, there's no guidelines for what I've outlined for the Pac-12. It was like an hour later. Pac-12 talking about starting football. Like, dude, if that's all it took to get college football going, these conferences were silly for not just going through with it from the start.
Yeah, because it's funny you say that, because Gavin Newsom was like, huh, what? Why are you asking me? There ain't no problem with that. Don't ask me that.
I'm not running USC, bro. I'm running the state of California.
You're writing Gavin letters and all this other stuff, and he's like, I don't know why you're writing me this letter.
Like, what is USC? What is USC coming at me for? Everybody knows I'm a Bruin fan. What are you talking about? You have those stats, by the way, because I want to dive into the Kings roster. Because they're Monty McNair, it's not like he's going to get to kick his feet up here at the, I've been away from that hotel so damn long. What is it called?
The
hot one downtown.
What? Now I'm drawing a blank. The Sawyer.
Thank you. My goodness. That's how long it's been. Can you believe, like, it's almost the holidays. It's technically the fall because we're past Labor Day. And, like, I mean, Halloween is around the corner. Then once you know Halloween passes, and then it's Thanksgiving, then Christmas trees come out. You know, all of this is very quickly approaching.
Very quickly. Very quickly. Halloween City is up at Delta Shores already. That's when you know it's time, when Halloween City is up.
Unbelievable. The point in all of that was, Monty McNair is not going to be able to kick his feet up for the next few months as we lean into the holidays.
He's got work to do.
He's got work to do on this roster, but you were talking about Marvin Bagley in that Phil Knight Classic. You have his numbers in front of you.
Yeah, man. I saw, I just remember, him killing, and I was like, well, maybe I misremembered it. Maybe I was off. Well, in the semifinal game of that thing against Texas, Texas was like a top 15 team at the time or something like that. Marvin Bagley went for 34-15 in a win against Texas. And then they played Florida in the championship of that game. And Marvin Bagley went for 30-15 that night against Florida. Man. So, I mean, it was just like I remembered. He was a monster.
I'm still of the belief he has the capable to be.
I do too. I really do. I really do. I really think, people talk Chris Bosh and all this other stuff. I think he can get there. I really see a 20-10 guy there.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. And I hope we get to see it. If nothing else, I don't know if this is a bad way of thinking or a positive way of thinking. I would rather him stay healthy and prove that he can't do that than to keep getting injured and just leave like this question. You know what I mean? Like, if he's not a capable player, then damn it, he's not a capable player. You missed. But I just don't see that in him. I don't at all.
The skill set is there. It's just there. He's got all the tools, man. And the stuff that, kind of plagues him right now, as far as like understanding the game, passing, read defense, playing defense. I think that's stuff that comes along the more you play and being in the NBA and understanding that stuff. So like you said, man, spot on, Damian. I would rather be wrong about him just talent wise, as opposed to not knowing because he didn't get a chance to play.
Yeah. Is salvaging, I don't know if that's the right word, is salvaging Marvin Bagley the most important thing Monty McNair has to do?
I think so. I think that Marvin Bagley arguably changes everything about this franchise. Like, yeah. Everything. Like, if he's who me and you and a lot of other people think he is, okay, you got action now. You got De'Aaron Fox putting up 20-9. Then you got a Marvin Bagley putting up 20-10. Now Buddy doesn't have to be a 20-point-per-game scorer. Maybe he's a 15-point-per-game. Bogey's an 11-point-per-game scorer. You know what I'm saying? It just fits. It makes everything fit. But if he doesn't work, now it's almost like tear it all down. Like, he has to work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you're going to – and this is what Monty McNair is going to have to figure out. If you're going to go with a lot of these guys that are already on the roster – like, Bagley has to work.
Yeah, and that's another topic worth discussing is what the actual roster looks like. James Hamm coming up at 1:30. You can get in here, 916-349-1320. We know that Fox is eligible for the big money extension this offseason. We know that Bogdan Bogdanovic is a restricted free agent, so the Kings have the ability to match any offer another team makes. And there are some, you know, the salary cap is going to be different, but it's not going to just be different for the Kings. It's going to be different for everybody in the entire league. So what is Bogey's value across the league going to be? And is there a number that the Sacramento Kings are unwilling to match? I think Bogey is probably in the range of 16, 17, 18. I would be surprised if he was higher than 18, but if a team wanted him bad enough, then you got Buddy.
Yeah. We'll see. Okay, well, now here's where we don't know these things. Ooh,
I did point out, Buddy's under contract, and he's under contract for a while, but I think he's a question mark.
He's getting paid for a minute. But this is where the pandemic and everything that's gone on in the league as far as the financial structure, the salary cap and everything could possibly play into helping the Kings. Whereas before this, you thought somebody was going to throw Bogdan the bag in the offseason and you would have to match. Now, you know, if you say 16, maybe you take $6 million off of that. Maybe you take $7 million off that. Somebody will throw them 10, 9, 11. You know what I mean? Harry Giles, where you were like, yo, he's good as gone. Somebody's going to, you know, overpay what the Kings could do. Maybe it's not so cut and dry. They may still do it, but it's not as cut and dry as it was before all the financial situations started to unfold with the NBA.
It probably depends, in my estimation, maybe on the financial status of the team. We've been led to believe that the Kings have been hit pretty hard. And it's not exclusive to the Kings. There are a number of teams that have been hit very hard by the pandemic. But with the salary cap, like, it's not going to go down and stay down.
Yeah.
It's going to go back up to normal. It's just when is it? Right. It's we know it's not next year, but we don't know if it's the year after either. And obviously, general managers, front offices, teams, they have significantly more information than we do. Mm-hmm. But despite the fact that America has kind of gone on with life as normal, we're not in control of this thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, so it's you can plan and say, okay, the salary cap is going to be down for the 2020-2021 season, and then it should be able to rebound in 21-22. But we don't know that any of that is actually possible. I did wonder if the state of our country would, and thus the state of the league, would bring down Bogey's price across the league. But I feel like if somebody wants him, they want him for a lengthy period of time, and they're willing to make sure that he gets the contract that he wants. And again, I think I don't think it drops as much as you just suggested, but I wouldn't be surprised if it dropped a little bit.
Maybe 16 to 12.
There you go. Like, fine. Yeah. Then, yeah.
Start, you're right. I don't think it'll go down to
13,
nine.
14, I mean, 15, 16.
That's wishful thinking. But you also got to look at, when thinking about that, the teams, I don't feel like there was a lot of teams, like when people dissected where he might go and who might really throw the bag at him, it was only, like, hypothetically speaking, like three teams.
Or was, you know, a couple. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like
San Antonio's always going to be a popular landing destination because we know that Greg Popovich loves him. There's all the still shots of Greg and, you know, Pop and Bogey hugging and all of that stuff. But he was always plus, you know, his ability to get the most out of international players. It was always thought that Pop was going to make a play for Bogey when the time was right.
But you made a good point at the start of the show where if we're assuming Monty McNair is doing the same Daryl Morey thing here in Sacramento, Bogey's probably a better fit now for that and what he might be trying to do. So that might change everything as far as, like, what they're willing to pay for him, because he may see him a little more vital. And or I guess Vladdy, people thought Vladdy was going to pay whatever too. Maybe Monty McNair is willing to do the same things.
Yeah, it's fascinating to think. It wasn't that long ago this team had three 20-point scorers. Mm-hmm. Like with DeMarcus and Isaiah and Rudy, and they still weren't winning. Mm-mm. And you know, so that it just brings to mind, like, okay, this team is at various stages has been able to put up points, but still not amount to a successful season. There's a lot Monty's got to figure out here, and he's got, you know, it's like, okay, hey, welcome to Sacramento, Monty McNair. We hope you're enjoying the Sawyer and the Golden One Center. We'll show you around to our various restaurants here. By the way, pal, I'm not sure if you've heard this. We've got a very passionate fan base, and this fan base has not seen a playoff game in 14 years. We expect you to fix that. Not only do we expect you to fix it, we kind of expect you to fix it like right away. We want to see noticeable changes immediately, and we want those changes to play. So go ahead, get comfortable, order whatever you like. It's on the house, but we need you to fix this, player, and yeah, we need you to fix it right now.
This thing in Sacramento with the Kings has turned into a fishbowl. It is almost like, I'm not even lying to you when I say this, Damian. It's almost like East Coast New York levels of scrutiny with just this particular situation. Like Kings and Sacramento, it's
passionate
a hotbed
fan
right
base,
now.
Man. Yeah,
I love it.
I love it.
I love it. I'm part of it. Okay, I'm a professional, but I'm keeping it a stack. I'm part of it. But man, like you just said, the scrutiny, the intensity, the immediate, change that these guys are wanting. It's there. It's real.
I think about this city, and I think about the way that they love their Kings and the way that they talk about their Kings. And I think about, like, my partner on the Sacramento Kings podcast, Jill Ash. She's just a fan who's really, really smart. You look at all of that great work on the Kings Herald. Like, those guys should be employed by, you know, The Athletic or Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. The work that you and Jason did at The Athletic before the pandemic started, man, this group of fans, you know, they're so passionate, and they lead to, you know, so many. There are some crazy ones out there. Don't get me wrong. And I'm sure James Hamm, he encounters many of them on a regular basis. Kings insider for NBC Sports, James Hamm, with us here on ESPN 1320. James, Monty McNair, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't know what you're talking about with crazy Kings fans at all. I don't. Oh, okay. That's foreign to me. I've never met one single crazy Kings fan. On Monty McNair, okay, so look, I'm excited. Like, I think this guy's brilliant. I think he's been in an organization for 13 years, which shows me something huge. Like, when you're sifting through applications, when you're working any managerial job, and you look at someone and they've had three different jobs in 3 different years, or, you know, 3 jobs in 1 year, you're leery about those people. And someone who's been with the same organization for 13 years, who's moved his way up through the ranks, who went to Princeton, who played football and not basketball and has a little bit different perspective, and who every single person I have talked to says is one of the nicest human beings they've ever met. That's a good thing. All of those are good things. I think they found a really, really brilliant executive, and I hope that they allow him to build his staff around him, and sort of fill the gaps in what knowledge he may lack, or the things that he's just not great at.
James, what is your thoughts about Joe Dumars still being a part of this front office? And I don't know if necessarily a part of the decision making, but he's got a voice in there. A lot of people are upset about that. I know me and Damian, we don't necessarily see it as a negative. How do you read that?
Well, it can't be a negative going forward. Like, he cannot meddle. If that's what he's there to do, then that's not a good thing. The Kings have had to have a bad habit of bringing in people who don't have pure motives, and they've done it repeatedly. And, you know, it's an unfortunate thing. It's another thing that when you're looking at people and you're sitting across from them and you're interviewing them, you need to make sure that their motives are pure. So if they feel that his motives are pure and he's here to help and not be the Littlefinger character from Game of Thrones, who's whispering in Vivek's ear and causing problems, then if they feel that he's not going to be that person, then, you know, I think people should get on board. He is a guy with a huge amount of knowledge in the NBA. He's a guy that's not only won championships as a player, he's a Hall of Famer, but he also got his team to the Eastern Conference Finals six straight times and, you know, did some amazing things with not amazing talent. So, you know, you have to like some of the things that Dumars brings to the table. I think there should always be concern, but as long as he's able to work with Monty McNair and that the basketball decisions go strictly through the guy who's hired to do the basketball decisions, then that's what should matter in the situation.
There was a great quote from Daryl Morey in a 2018 press release about Monty McNair's involvement and his ability to work with the coaching staff. How much of that do you think is a factor in his, you know, ability and perhaps desire to work with the coaching staff? How much of that is a factor, do you think, in Luke Walton's future?
You know, I think it's going to be interesting. Can Luke adjust? Can he adapt to the person that they're bringing in? Is he who Monty wants? I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, every GM wants to have their guy in place. So I don't know if he has a guy that he has in mind or if he even has the latitude at this point because Walton's in a contract for another 3 years. But I think when you look at the strengths that McNair brings, it's some really good stuff. You know, analytics are a tool. They're one of many tools that you have to have when you're running an NBA organization. But they aren't the end-all, be-all. And what I like about McNair's skill set is he's one of the rare guys that has the ability to translate that incredible amount of information to the basketball court and be able to have those conversations with players and coaches about why analytics matter. Because it kind of feels like the Kings have an analytics department and they've had a basketball department, and those two things really don't mesh. The last two coaches that they brought in were not analytics-based coaches, you know, in Dave Yeager and again, Luke Walton. I think that these guys can be taught analytics and why they're so valuable. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got to use all of the tools that are around you. And if you're not using those tools correctly, then I think changes will come down the road.
James, what have you been able to find out about the role that Monty McNair played in Houston? We all know his title, but was he somebody that was integral in, you know, in designing trades, or somebody that Daryl Morey, that was the last guy that he asked before he decided to make a decision, like his complete right-hand man? Or, you know, what kind of influence did he have with Daryl Morey while he was in Houston?
You know, I think that's a mystery. He's a guy that's kind of hidden under the radar a little bit. But that doesn't mean that he's not part of, you know, a wild, wild, you know, intelligent group of guys in Houston. I think if you look at Morey, he's been able to find talent on the basketball court and off the basketball court that's sort of undervalued, and then develop and bring them along. And so, you know, even we watched Ben McLemore have great moments for the Houston Rockets this year after basically being out of the league. He was, you know, on his last legs in the NBA after the Kings selected him and he bounced around. So I think when you're looking at a guy who's worked in a system like that, he's worked around a guy like Sam Hinkie, who is just, you know, a gunslinger when it comes to trades. He's worked with Sachin Gupta, who I spoke to earlier today and has nothing but incredible things to say about Monty McNair. Just says not only is he a tremendous intelligence and just one of the big up-and-coming guys in the league, but he's also even a better human being. He's a great person off the court. But when you look at all of the people he's worked with, that's what you're kind of looking for. You're looking for, you know, someone who has seen some of these things. You know, I tell my boys all the time, you don't have to be the one that makes a mistake. You can actually watch somebody else make a mistake and learn from it just the same. And I think, you know, it's something that we might see from this guy where, like, look, I don't have to be like Sam Hinkie or like Gupta or some of these other guys that they've brought in and who have been wildly successful or have had some huge swings and misses. I can do things my way, and my way might be a combination of many skill sets that I've learned watching other people do the way they do things. And so I'm excited about that opportunity. again, a really bright guy, really good guy, and hopefully he fits long term.
Kings insider James Hamm with us here on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. You mentioned you talked to Sachin Gupta. A lot of people, not just in Sacramento, but league-wide, including in Minnesota, thought this was his job to lose. Do you have any idea what swayed Vivek and the Kings management towards Monty McNair over Sachin Gupta?
No, I think at the end of the day, one guy got the job and one guy didn't. You know, I think that's sort of the basics that I learned. He said the process here was spectacular, that he had a good vibe from everybody involved. He enjoyed his visit, enjoyed talking to Joe D and to Vivek and his son and the Kings brass. He said he got a good vibe. But at the end of the day, he's very happy that, you know, his friend got a really good job and a bump up. He says he's known him for 15 years. And, you know, this is one of those deals, like when you go put your name in for a job, it doesn't matter what the media says, what everybody says on the outside. It's the decision that's made behind the door, the closed doors, that matter. And he even said that he was excited about when he heard the potential for both of them being together here. But I didn't get the sort of the vibe that he had been sort of brought in on that discussion, that mm-hmm. if that was a potential for both him and McNair, while he, you know, he would have like loved that idea because he and McNair are friends. He also kind of looked at it, you know, as just one of those things that you see out in the media. It's not something that he was, you know, brought in and gone through the whole discussion. So, the Kings chose their path, and this is the guy they went with, and it is what it is at this point.
Talking about the Kings chose their path, that leads right into the question that I want to ask you, James. Is this a unified decision, or did everybody kind of lean one way? And the man talking about Vivek was wowed by McNair and made his decision.
You know what? I think at the end of the day, there aren't enough people left in the front office, and what, you know, this isn't like a huge robust front office at this point. You're pretty stripped down. I mean, when you see some of the guys who have left, you know, whether it be Vlade or Peja, but there's more than that. There's other people. So at this point, somebody has to be the guy who makes a decision. And if I hope it was Vivek's decision. I hope this is the guy that he fell in love with and that made sense to him. Because at the end of the day, he's the chairman. He's the guy who will ultimately be held responsible. He is the guy that has been held responsible, that fans have turned on in certain situations. And at this point, you know, I think you chose the guy that you wanted. And at the end of the day, he's going to have to live with that decision, whether it's right or it's wrong. We won't know for, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years, whether this was the right decision or the wrong decision. But, you know, this is the path they've chosen. And I do believe that this was, you know, Vivek. Vivek had the final say. This was the guy.
Great insight, James, and always great to talk to you, my man. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
It's James Hamm.
I was about to say, you didn't sing. You
Whoa,
didn't sing on
Hamm.
There. I was waiting
James
for you
Hamm.
To hit him with the.
I can't. Like, it's just
who,
like
who
I,
was that? That was my man Aaron Hall who said singing like that, right?
You can't. Like, if you know, and you can't say James Hamm without going Hamm. It's just impossible. Like, now everybody's gonna do it. Like, we make this a trend. I'm gonna ruin James Hamm's life. Everybody's gonna Hamm.
You're gonna be walking around the Golden One Center, and that's just all you hear all throughout the hallways.
Surprised it's already not. Of course, it is 2020 and not, you know, 1989 or whatever year that song came out. But we appreciate James Hamm, Kings insider for NBC Sports, being here with us.
There was something that he brought up that kind of reminded me of one of the things I am kind of excited to see with Monty McNair. He talked about, you know, some of the finding players. And one, I read that he did a lot with getting the G League affiliate for the Houston Rockets to a very high level and using that G League to bring guys back and forth between the big club and the G League team. The Stockton Kings, I think they already do a great job with the Stockton Kings. But if you can bring somebody in that's going to bolster that and really do even more to develop players, I mean, that could be a huge asset. You look at some of the people on the roster. Ben McLemore, he mentioned. I'm not sure where PJ Tucker was before. I know he went overseas. I don't know if he was with another NBA team before he actually really caught on with the Rockets, but he was a G League guy. Daniel House, you know, that was another guy that came out of nowhere from the G League. So I could see the Stockton Kings being a huge part of building this roster and building this team moving forward, and that excites me.
PJ Tucker was overseas. He was on a team in Germany. He played for Toronto, Phoenix. But he had an extensive career overseas.
Damian Barling, Kenny Caraway, four topics, two arguments, no winners. One on one with D'Lo and KC.
KC, this doesn't have anything to do with one-on-one here, but I do want to bring this to you. Jackson State, a HBCU, historical black college, they have named a new football coach.
Okay.
You may have heard of him. Deion Sanders.
Wait, prime time?
Prime time. Deion Sanders, the new head coach at Jackson State.
Congratulations to him and good for Jackson State.
What is it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Deion, which is important. It's Deion. It's a HBCU. It's important.
Yes.
Deion is a head coach.
Well, look, when you talk about Jackson State, when you talk about colleges, half the battle is recruiting and being on anybody's radar. I can probably safely say, shout out to my man Alan Rowe, who gets it out here in Sacramento about the HBCUs. But a lot of these kids don't even know Jackson State exists, right? Now they do.
That's a good point. But man, I'm excited for it. Yeah. I'm anxious to see the highlights of Jackson State.
I want to watch Jackson State. Are they going to be on BET? Remember, BET used to play the HBCU games? Yeah, put them on BET all year. I want to see that.
Surrounded by reruns of Martin. I'm all for that. That's a hell of a Saturday right there. That's a hell of a Saturday. What, the pregame show for the HBCU football game is Martin. There's nothing wrong with that. I know you don't agree with me, but it's actually true. Mm. Week two of the NFL season kicks off tonight.
Kind of.
You've got to set your fantasy lineup if you've got...
Oh, that's a good... Oh!
Well,
I do have to set my fantasy lineup because I need to beat down my opponent this week.
Oh, yeah? Wait a minute. Is it me?
Uh-huh.
Is it you and me this week?
I need to beat down my opponent this week.
All right. Well, that's fine. I'll beat you despite the fact I had two guys on my roster go to IR this week, including Marlon Mack.
But I shouldn't have said anything. Maybe you wouldn't have checked.
I had been thinking about it, and then, you know, there are members of our league who work very closely with us, who get the, you know, they get the ability while we're doing a radio show to go to the waiver wire and start claiming guys off of the waiver wire while we're here doing an award-winning broadcast. I don't know that the game tonight is going to be award-winning, but the Browns, they didn't look good in week number one, but the caveat is they were playing a very good football team in the process. Here they're playing the Bengals. We don't exactly know what the Bengals were. They fell short in their comeback attempt last week against the Los Angeles Chargers. But how bad does it get for Cleveland? Like, what level of panic? How many times do they hit the panic button if they wind up going 0-2 again and they lose to the Cincinnati Bengals?
Yeah, if they lose to Cincinnati, it is a full out. They're breaking the glass in the case of emergency. They're slamming on the panic button. Baker Mayfield may not be the starting quarterback in week three if they lose to the Bengals.
We just looked it up. Case Keenum, right? Was it Case Keenum?
Yes.
Case Keenum is the backup quarterback. Are we on Case Keenum alert if Cleveland loses?
Absolutely. But you know, I have ulterior motives for this game. I want the Browns to lose. I don't want Baker to look completely terrible, because then they'll go to Case Keenum and then they might win a couple games, okay. and then they might not be inclined to take my phone calls when I ask about Odell Beckham. So I want the Browns to lose by maybe about 10. Baker looks okay, but they just lose and they start to look hopeless and things of that nature.
We need a quick therapy session. Why do you hate Baker Mayfield?
Not taking the music off, though.
Talk to your boy. What did Baker do to you?
We'll talk about it off the show.
What? Okay, he did something, because it's this level of contempt
we'll talk about it off the show. It's
rather high.
But look, I just said I want Baker to play relatively well, because if he plays terrible,
but you want them to lose because you're still trying to figure out Odell Beckham.
That's why I want him to lose. All right.
Are we going to do this every week?
Until he's wearing that 13 in 49ers red and gold, yes.
I sent you a picture of Odell in the 49er red. I thought that would be enough. It looked perfect. That was a great Photoshop, whoever made that.
Let's go. So, yeah, right. Go Bengals. Go Joe Burrow. AJ Green, do your thing, baby. And I actually think the Bengals are going to win. Like, seriously, I think they're going to win tonight.
Ooh. Man, okay, that's bad news. That's bad news. I'm with you. Like, it gets bad if they lose again, because this puts their, you know, you're starting to see a trend here. And I know Stefanski is new. I know all of that, but you've got to start winning games. You've got way too much talent. I know. I think I just read a tweet from Schefter a couple of minutes ago. Questionable is Jarvis Landry. Mm. Yeah, like, man, damn it. If only they had Jarvis Landry, they could have beat the Bengals. If that sentence is uttered, you got a problem. You've got exactly. two very capable running backs in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Mm-hmm. You've got to establish your one game. That's going to help Baker Mayfield a little bit. Baker Mayfield can be a running quarterback. By the way, we saw great performances from running quarterbacks last week. Mm-hmm. They've got to get the job done. They absolutely have to get the job done here this week.
Yeah, I joke about this not starting week two. And it doesn't. But this is a big game. This is a big game for the Browns and what they're trying to salvage of their season this year. Big game for them. So I'll check it out. I'll check it out for sure. Damian, we've talked about this a number of different times over the course of our show since it's been on college football and the craziness of it and SEC playing, ACC playing, but Big Ten and Pac-10 not playing. What does this season even mean? We touched on it a little bit earlier. Looks like, well, we know for sure the Big Ten is back. All right. They're back. They'll be starting, I think, October 24th. And they'll be back trying to get into the college football playoffs. Pac-12. They look like they're on their way back. They got to kind of climb a couple of hurdles with, you know, local policies and things of that nature. But let's be honest. They're playing.
They're trying
to find a way to get in so they can possibly be in the college football playoff.
Yep.
My question to you. Does all this change your excitement? Are you like, because it looks like we could possibly be like all the way back with college football. Are you excited?
Not yet, because I don't agree with it. Mm. I mean, I understand why they're doing it. You've got kids in school, and it's not the athletes that are contracting COVID at an alarming rate. It's the kids who are just being college kids.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of, if you're going to, I guess, I'm not excited yet, but I know when Ohio State takes the field to beat Michigan for the 15th year in a row, I'm going to be really excited. Like it's a tradition unlike any other. And I'm going to be excited to watch that. And all kidding aside, even though I wasn't even remotely kidding, Ohio State, I think, has the best team in the country. And I can envision Ryan Pace like begging, like pleading, please, like get us back out there. Like this is my chance, player. Let me get out there.
Yeah.
They've got a chance to win the, it's weird because by the time the Big Ten starts, like what day is today? September 17th. So 18th, mm-hmm. 19th, like Alabama, the SEC, these schools that are already playing, they might be like 4 or 5 games into the season mm-hmm. before the Big Ten steps on the football field for the first time.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be one of the most awkward college football selection processes mm-hmm. that we've had. They're all awkward. Mm-hmm. This one is going to be exceptionally awkward because there's no idea, because the schedules are set. So there's not going to be any, you know, conference matchups between the SEC and the Big Ten. It is going to be super, super subjective. Like the Ohio State or Wisconsin, Penn State, they were all very highly ranked. They're going to have to go out there. Not only do they got to win, they got to start thinking about how many points they win by. And when that happens, you talked about trap games earlier this week. It always that one always creeps along there at the end of the season, and one of those teams is going to get stuck.
It's going to be almost all on like the look test. You know, how do they look?
Yep.
Almost, because the resumes are just going to be so discombobulated. It's going to be hard to go that way. I got to be honest with you, Damian. I'm looking forward to it.
I know you are. You've been watching all along.
I can't
wait.
Saturday when I was watching college football, I was like, this kind of feels right. This kind of feels right.
Yeah.
So if we can get them all back, if I can get the Pac-12 on at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, yeah, I'm okay with it.
If it's meaningful, and it appears that it is, I'm fine. I'm not there yet because the Big Ten isn't playing yet, and neither is the Pac-12. Yep. So Saturday, I'm good. I'm going to watch something else. Okay. Next Saturday, I'm good. I'm going to watch something else.
SEC but when all is back. Five,
what's back?
SEC is back this weekend.
Okay. So three of the conference. Like, it's not. And I say that, of course, if I flip on the right time, might be like, watch a little Bama here. Let's see what's going on. Yeah. I'm not there yet, but I recognize I it's close. Mm-hmm. Not yet, but it's close. We're running short on time. Let's make this our last one. Game two of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. Who and why? And why are we both going to likely continue to disrespect the Miami Heat and pick the Boston Celtics?
Because this is going seven, so Boston's going to win tonight. 1-1 going into game three. That's how it's going down.
Yeah, I agree. The Heat are 9-1 this postseason, though.
Wow.
Like, how do we continue
to... That's crazy.
Why are we picking Boston? This team has shown no weakness yet. I'm going to give you one chance. Either one of us going to back out?
No, I'm going with Boston. Boston probably should have won game one.
You know what? I'm going to go with Miami.
Oh.
I'm going to go with Miami.
After he cursed me out for saying Miami the other day.
Because every time I picked against them, I've been wrong.
Oh, so it's a reverse jinx.
It's reverse psychology. It's when you say the opposite and you convince somebody to do something stupid.
Yeah.
As Michael Scott would say. The Celtics, they got to win this. I mean, it was a hell of a... If we get anything like we got, if we get a game-deciding block, dude, we're all winners.
Ooh.
We are all winners.
This time it's going to be Williams on Jimmy Butler.
Is that Robert Williams? Grant Williams?
The tall Williams. It's the center Williams. I can't remember which his first name was.
Grant Williams. I think that's Tennessee, University of Tennessee product.
No, things I love about sports.
Asia Wilson. How about they both block it? How about that?
Sure.
All right. Asia Wilson was in a boot when the WNBA wobble season started. Mm. Today, she was named the WNBA MVP. She is likely the face, or very, very soon to be the face of the WNBA. Thanks to James Hamm. Thanks to Damon Bruce. Thanks to Jason Jones, all for joining us. If you missed any part of today's show, there was a lot of information in it. Download the radio.com app, search ESPN 1320. Hit the heart. You can use the rewind feature. We DVR our program for you in case you miss anything. Thanks again so much for tuning in. We're back tomorrow with a preview of the Jets and the 49ers. Damon Ratto and Kolsky are coming up next here on Sacramento's home of 49ers football, ESPN 1320.
Holla. D-Lo and Casey on the home for Sacramento Sports Talk, ESPN 1320.